Welcome to the Pitchology Podcast with me, your host, Steve DeStante. Discover the best strategies entrepreneurs use to raise capital to help their businesses scale and grow. Hear personal stories of what people did in order to be able to figure out that next level of their business, which required capital. Whether you're a successful entrepreneur or simply aspiring to join the world of entrepreneurship, capital raising is often a very vital part of your growth and success. Hello, and welcome to this episode of The Perfect Pitch, the entrepreneur's guide to raising capital through storytelling. Today, I have Will Wiseman, who is the founder of Kitty Hawk Investments, a venture capital fund. Hey, Will, welcome to our show.
Thank you, my friend. Great to be with you.
Nice to see you again. I think the last time we saw each other was at the XPRIZE headquarters, huh?
That is correct. Yeah, about a month ago, I think. That a little bit over.
Good time. Got to meet with a whole bunch of interesting people there. My gosh, you and Peter Diamandis keep some interesting company.
It's I feel very, very lucky to be in that ecosystem, my friend. It's just extraordinary people, always incredibly stimulating intellectually, incredible from kind of a networking perspective and getting to connect with extraordinary human beings who are trying to move the world forward. It's a really special place.
Yeah, and I got to see you perform, quote unquote, on stage with Peter, and you were at the Abundance 360 event, the one that I had attended.
Yeah.
But that's not your first rodeo with Peter, right?
No. So I've actually been working with Peter now for, I think it's about 8 years or so, maybe a little bit more than that. So I was executive director at Singularity University. Peter Diamandis and Ray Kurzweil were the two founders there. So I've had the great pleasure of getting to work with him for a very long time and getting to help build Singularity into a global organization with about 180 chapters and about 160 countries and like 300,000 community members or members over that period. So he's an amazing guy, as is Ray, and just love this whole ecosystem of being around people who are passionate about technology, passionate about moving the world forward, and believe that we're living in a really extraordinary time filled with abundance.
Abundance and exponential opportunity, right? I mean, just like look at what's going on around us, how much the world has changed inside of a year. I mean, my gosh, we're going to be up at that March 13th date shortly, which would make it 1 year for me that you couldn't fly in or out of the country. And so we're coming up on that 1 year mark during the pandemic. And how many years do you think we've jumped ahead?
I'd say 5 years, maybe 5-6 years. I mean, some businesses have just been pushed ahead, you know, I don't know, 10 years or 20 years. It's been absolutely extraordinary. The rate of change, as Peter talks about and we talk about a lot, both at Singularity and Abundance 360, is accelerating. And this is one of these periods where you absolutely feel it. And the world, it's exciting. I mean, it's pushing us in so many different ways and that we really needed to move forward, I think.
Yeah, we've kind of gotten to a whole new place. And so you, in addition to what you do with Abundance 360 now, you also have your own venture capital fund. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, sure can. So my life prior to joining Singularity was a mixture actually of venture capital and entrepreneurship. And a few years into Singularity, I started realizing that it was just a really extraordinary ecosystem for investing. And so started putting together some small deals and then larger deals, kind of these syndicates. And then some of those investors offered to anchor me in a dedicated fund. So raised a small fund at the end of 2018. And then left Singularity in early 2020 to focus full-time on scaling Kitty Hawk. And we are a frontier-focused technology venture capital firm. So you can imagine all the, you know, interesting tech forward companies that you see in the SU and Abundance ecosystem and everything from quantum computing software to machine vision robotics, lots of AI, med tech and fintech, synthetic biology. These are all areas that we invest in, and we try to find companies that are very much, you know, very young companies. So we say we're a late seed focused venture firm. So companies, we will write some first checks, but try to ideally find companies companies that are a little bit further along, have a core team in place, have a product or service that's about to be in market or is in market.
So you'd even go pre-revenue before they have made a nickel?
Yeah, yeah. Frequently. I mean, we try to find ones where they're just starting to generate their first revenue. So we think maybe there's some product market fit that's happening. But for some of these companies, right, you really have to invest. It's sometimes very much at the idea stage, or they're doing a lot of work still to kind of finalize the technology to solve some sort of very hard business problem. Like you heard Mary Lou Jepsen speak one of the days at Abundance 360. So we're an investor in her company, and that's one that's focusing on kind of next generation medical diagnostics. And so it's very much a technology play, a hardware play, a lot of R&D to develop the product and then prove it out, and then some regulatory issues. So to get involved with an opportunity like that at an early stage, you've got to go in pre-revenue. And, you know, or if you're a much larger firm and playing later stage, you can come in after some of the risk is, a lot of the risk has been taken out of the equation. But for us, we love early stage. We love working with these extraordinary entrepreneurs who are trying to solve very hard problems and are trying to build, you know, multi-billion dollar companies. And that's where we love to play.
So we're talking today about venture capitalists or venture fund. Could you just share with me what that means? Let's get to 101. What does it mean to have a venture fund?
Venture fund. So there's a category of kind of private equity. And within private equity, there's kind of later stage, what typically is called PE or private equity. But venture capital is also part of that and focuses on the earliest stages of company building. So when there's a lot more risk basically in those companies. And as a result of taking more risk, you can also have much higher rewards. So these tend to be blind pools. So investors contribute capital to the fund, and then the general partners of the fund have the discretion to go and try to find investments that they are excited about and then back those companies. And usually they try to put together a portfolio. So, you know, you're creating dispersing or distributing your risk. Like we will try to put together a portfolio of kind of 25 to 30 companies. Some venture funds will be more concentrated but we believe that you got to have a certain number of companies and, you know, kind of 20 plus to have enough of a portfolio that you've really distributed the risk. It's one of the really interesting things about these businesses is it's very, very hard to predict your winners. A lot of times, you know, the companies that you think are going to be the big winners ultimately end up running into challenges and don't do so great. And a lot of times it's the companies that seem to be struggling that the market catches up or they tweak their business model and then all of a sudden explode. So it's very healthy for everyone to have a portfolio. One other thing I would say is these are long life funds. So a venture fund is a 10-year fund. Typically, you're actively investing in new companies for kind of the first 4 years or so, maybe up to 5 years of the fund. Then you kind of start to get into most of the capital is going into follow-on investments and supporting those companies. And then you're kind of harvesting in years kind of five onwards. So it's a illiquid investment. You know, you make your commitment, capital is drawn, you know, maybe on a quarterly basis. So you're not giving all of your money up front to the fund. It's getting called over a 10-year period. So that's nice from a cash flow perspective. And because you're taking risks and involved with companies at their earliest stages and kind of riskiest stages, the rewards can be extraordinary. And so, you know, you can have companies that are 50x, 100x type of returns and funds that can do, I mean, a great fund. Typical funds are kind of 2.5x invested capital, but you can have funds that, you know, are 5x invested capital. And so really exciting return profiles if you end up with successful funds.
Wow, a lot there to unpack. So yeah, we've got the investor, right? So accredited, you know, wealthy investor.
Yes. Yep.
Commits a dollar amount, typically what, 250, half a million, a million? What's the number?
It totally varies by fund. We're kind of $500,000 and up for our fund, but it really varies. I mean, if you're like, we'll have a $50 million fund and you have to be under 100 investors. So you start to do that math and that kind of dictates what your minimum will be. And then, you know, bigger funds, they're going after institutional investors that might be writing $25 or $50 million commitments. So it really kind of depends on stage.
So we got 100 or less, and you said you ask for capital on a quarterly basis?
Yeah, quarterly, or like for this first year, we did a one-time call for the year, 15% of the commitment, and then we'll probably be quarterly kind of going forward.
Got it. Not bad. So you get the cash flow. Now, during this process, do you sell off maybe some of the companies? Is that possible?
Yeah. So, you know, you never know when a company is going to get acquired, right? Sometimes it happens early in their cycle and there'll be an M&A opportunity. Sometimes companies, you know, you hope you're always trying to build companies to be, or at least we are, large independent companies that could go public at some point. And those are the type of opportunities that we look for. And so that when you're investing in the earliest days, it takes a long time to get there, but it's typically kind of years 5 and onward where you start to see some of those liquidity events happening. Again, companies getting acquired or going public. And in this day and age where companies sometimes are waiting longer to go public, sometimes there are kind of secondary opportunities where you can sell some of your shares even before the companies get public. But for us, we're thinking about, you know, how do we actively create liquidity and get distributions back to our investors and you know, again, kind of beginning in year 5 onward.
So we're talking about a 10-year period for a person to invest, but you could have capital calls that are a little larger, and then people could actually draw money out during that period,
yeah,
because you have sold the position.
That's right, exactly. And that's what you're hoping. That's why we're in the game, and venture capitalists are incentivized on what gets returned to the to your investors, basically. So you have carry in a fund, so we get 20% of the profits. It's called carry for a venture capital firm or for a PE firm as well. And so our incentive is to find amazing companies, help them grow, give them capital, give them, you know, help them with networking and customers and attracting great employees. And then at some point, help them reach an exit. And that, again, could be via M&A or could be by an IPO. And then when that happens, we get capital back and then that gets distributed back to the limited partners, to our investors.
Nice. So how much of an equity position are you taking in these companies typically?
Totally varies. Could be as high as 10%, could be, you know, a 0.5% or a percent. In general, we're trying to be probably in the 3-5% range. We're, you know, kind of smaller on the fund size, $50 million. Well, might sound like a nice chunk of capital and is a decent sized fund for early stage investing. In the scheme of private equity and VC, it's actually a very, very small amount of capital. Also, one of the key things we're really trying to do is build syndicates, meaning we try to bring, you know, find great co-investors, other great venture firms or individuals that we know can add a lot of strategic value to these companies and have them come and be part of these financings that, you know, whether we're leading or whether we're part of one of those. That's just a critical piece to make sure you've got really strong investors around the table. And, you know, as we all know, it's very challenging to build a business. You never know whether, you know, when you're going to hit a real bump in the road and you're going to need more capital. Frequently, you know, these things always seem to take longer and require more capital than you expect, and hard to predict things like a COVID pandemic or other black swan type of event. And so just to have really strong co-investors around the table is something that helps a lot and contributes to a higher probability of success with these businesses.
So are you sitting on the board? Are you advising? What's the relationship with the entrepreneur, with the business?
So it totally depends on the business and on the entrepreneur, on their need and their kind of desires. We and where the company is. And there's times where a company will need lots of help and want lots of help and will be super actively involved. And then it will enter the next phase of its growth and they don't need that same type of help from us. We will go on the board in general. I don't do a lot of boards. It tends to, you know, we're a small shop. And so you don't scale as easily if you're taking on all these board seats. So trying to limit the number of board seats, but be very actively involved kind of on an as needed basis. So I try to, like, I've been an entrepreneur. I know how hard it is. I love working with entrepreneurs. And so for me, it's, you know, it's a real honor to get to support them and be able to work with them. And so, you know, trying to make myself available kind of 24/7 as they need it. And they reach out, you know, as they need it.
So you invest a few million dollars into a company, let's say.
Yep.
And then there's, so the life is, this business is born, it grows, you take under 10% typically. The company goes through a cycle of some sort. You divest when some occurrence happens. And those occurrences could be going public. It could be that somebody acquires them. Could be that they get merged into another company. Any other scenarios where a company might go in these circumstances?
I mean, those are really the two main ones. I mean, it's either a company fails and it goes to zero. You know, sometimes there's kind of a soft landing where another company will acquire it and you'll get stock in a company and that gives you some upside. But in general, it's really about the M&A activity being acquired by a strategic or going public. I mean, actually now you're seeing with SPACs, we got a couple companies now that are on SPAC roadshows, and that may be an interesting and fairly early path to liquidity for us. And, you know, as you know, it's a path to getting public, but it's a differentiated path and a much easier and more capital efficient way for these companies to get public. But that's kind of the realm of paths for these companies now.
There you go. I forgot SPACs are back, right?
Yeah. Yeah. In a crazy way, big way.
Yeah.
I think it's great though. I got to say, Steve, I mean, it's, you know, it's a little frothy clearly in terms of the number of SPACs that are taking place, but so, like, if you think back 10 or 15 years ago, when you invested in a young, you know, in an IPO, there was still so much upside in those companies, right? And now you see these private companies basically staying private for so much longer. And so much of the upside is kind of, by the time they get public, so much of that upside has been already taken out by PE investors or venture capitalist investors. And so I think SPACs are just a fascinating way now for earlier stage companies to get public and for investors to be able to find companies that give them still, you know, 10, 50X type of opportunities.
So SPACs are back. People are putting money into that, trying it out, but some people are choosing not to go public. They don't have to deal with the regulatory issues. I mean, it's a whole new ball game and suddenly your hands are tied in a multitude of ways. So I can understand why public isn't probably a good choice for a lot of companies. I've actually seen companies have gone public and then bought all their shares back and said, we're done with this. We're finished.
Right. I totally agree. I think it makes sense for a lot of companies. And if you're lucky enough to have easy access to capital, and there's never been, you know, more capital out there, it's a much easier environment to be, you know, to remain private and to be able to just keep growing and your business that way out of the kind of public eye.
Yeah, avoid all of the regulatory environment. I get all those headlines. So you're on the hunt as a venture capitalist for what I'm told is called the unicorn. What is a unicorn and do they exist?
They do exist. So a unicorn is a company that's worth $1 billion or more. They do exist. And I think, you know, there's probably never been more unicorns. What's fascinating now and so exciting is that businesses can create, you can just create value so quickly. Like if you create the right business model, you know, find the right market opportunity, businesses are able to get out and, you know, access capital and grow so quickly and create shareholder value so quickly.
Sort of side question here. If I'm in your venture capital fund and I'm an investor, do we get like a K-1 every year? Am I able to take advantage of losses and things? How does that work?
Yeah, you get a K-1. Venture capital firms in general try to avoid ordinary business income for folks. But as there are losses, those push through. And as there are gains, those push through as well.
Got it. So that's a little bit easier way to manage your taxes. So I don't want to get off the unicorn. I really want to learn a story about one of these unicorns, one of these companies. Doesn't have to be a unicorn, but a company's story, a pitch, a company that you felt was much different in their delivery, or a story that's so memorable to you that, you know, you've played it over and over or told it to 100 people because it was just so compelling. Do you have a story like that?
I do have a story like that. I mean, you know, I love the venture capital business because you get to meet so many amazing entrepreneurs and get exposed to businesses that you would never, you know, I never would have come up with and realized what huge opportunities there were. So I have a portfolio company called Jetty Resources, J-E-T-T-I Resources. It's a company, it was one of my earlier investments. It's in our first fund. And the story goes like this. The founding entrepreneur had been in the liquefied natural gas business, and he was really an investor, an entrepreneur, and but had started this LNG business. It was based in China. They had finished building out this big plant, and then all of a sudden, fracking came online, and fracking completely changed the economics of the business and completely destroyed their LNG business. So this entrepreneur stepped back and he asked himself, you know, what other natural resources were essentially locked up that technology might be able to unlock, and went out and looked at the different markets that were out there, identified copper as this market that generates, you know, over $120 billion a year, is growing dramatically. And it turns out that a majority of the world's copper is locked up inside something called high chalcopyrite ore, which is a byproduct of, you know, as these big mines are trying to pull out the copper, they're pulling out all this rock that essentially is either worth zero or is a liability to them. So tons of it everywhere. People cannot economically extract the copper from it at all. My friend Andrew, who's the founder, Andrew Perlman, went out and basically started working with these different universities to see if anyone was working on any technology that or advanced material that might be able to unlock this copper. And he was able to go and find a couple of universities, sponsor some research, then find one, and then spun out the IP and created this company, Jetty, that goes and adds this catalyst that they have created to the existing leaching process that pulls the copper out of the rock and does it in a more environmentally friendly way, which is a nice benefit, and then turns all this worth zero or liability or into huge revenue opportunities for these mines. And so this company is signing like 50% revenue shares with these mines. So it's one that is, you know, they're now actually being deployed in mines and starting to go through this really rapid growth. This should be a company that's worth tens of billions of dollars and, you know, just enormous tech-like margins on the business. Amazing entrepreneur who took, you know, a really painful experience and a failure with one venture to see and kind of start him on this whole other process of creating a new business. So it's a really interesting one. It's one that I think is very unusual in terms of, you know, venture investments, and one that is going to be a unicorn for sure.
So is Kitty Hawk invested in them? Or
yeah, Kitty Hawk's an investor in that.
Nice. So investors that come into your fund now would have the benefit of owning part of that company?
They would not. So that's fund one. We're actually now raising fund three. And so each one of these funds, sometimes there's some crossover between companies. Like, so fund three, I just made our first investment into what I think is the hottest company in our fund two. And there was an opportunity to close out their Series A round. And, you know, I was kind of thinking about how do I ensure that I'm going to have a super successful fund three with any known companies. That was one. But in general, they tend to be distinct group of companies and investors are only have access to that pool.
Got it. I thought it was in the current fund. So you left off with Series A round. What does that mean?
Companies tend to, they're just stages of raising capital, and kind of each one of the financings has a name. So a lot of times the first one is a seed round, then there's Series A, Series B, Series C, and it just kind of denotes where in the fundraising process the company is, you know, kind of what stage they are in terms of maturity. A lot of times as you get further down, so into the B's and C's and D's, you're doing much bigger rounds and the valuation of the company goes up significantly as a result of that. Usually as companies get further along, they've figured out their business more, there's less risk, there's more actual data and team to be able to look at and reflect upon to really understand kind of, you know, where the continuing risks exist. And so less risk, less reward, more reward, or more risk, more reward in kind of those earlier stage kind of seed and Series A type of investments.
So you're typically going in at what stage?
We're typically seed and sometimes some Series A.
Hmm. I'm having a conversation with David Rose of New York Angels. And so angel investors go in seed also, right? From time to time?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that tends to be where they play at the earliest stages where there's the most risk, where more institutional type of investors aren't quite as comfortable. So a lot of times, like, you'll hear about entrepreneurs getting going and it's, you know, friends and family who help kind of get them going with the earliest stages and the riskiest capital at that seed stage. Then they'll get a team in place and a product, and then they'll start to get some more kind of professional investors who start to participate at that point. So we will play at just the idea stage sometimes, very rarely. But if we find an entrepreneur that we like have known for a while, and this business is all about people, like most businesses, but you know, finding and backing extraordinary humans who are, you know, have a clear insight and passion about what they're trying to do, or have a real mission that's driving them. If you find people like that that you've seen be successful, and we've, you know, gotten to know over a long period of time, sometimes we will be part of the absolute first money that goes in. But a lot of times, try to wait a little bit longer, see how they, you know, kind of put that core business together, and then come in to support them. Still very early and super risky.
So that is so valuable what you just said. And you're saying, what did I just say? What you just shared about a proximity, being known, being a consistent person who shows up and has a passion and a will that's been demonstrated. And it's not just all of a sudden flash in the pan, here's this person, you're scratching your head. Well, who is this human being? And are they valid? Who do they know? And so on. So being part of a community of some sort is really important. I mean, I do a lot of work with the Entrepreneurs Organization. And typically I can just go to my EO relationships in the chapter or globally or so and say, you know, do you know so-and-so? And would you vouch for them? And they're not going to say anything positive unless they can vouch for them. And typically they're not going to be part of those ecosystems if they are not, you know, in a good spot. But, you know, you said a whole bunch of other things that you were looking for, that passion, that drive that you're looking for. So you've pretty much set the stage for this personality, this human being. What else do you look for? Is there other things, as you think real deep about the ideal entrepreneur that you're looking for, who are they? And can you kind of build that model?
Certainly grit. like perseverance. It's so hard to be an entrepreneur, I think. I mean, I've taken a bunch of swings at it, some more successful than others, and like the highest highs and the lowest lows. And so you really need someone who, you know, failure isn't really going to be an option in their mind. Like they're just so dedicated and gonna just plow through and make it happen. Like hired guns, they go on to their next gig if something, you know, isn't working out well. Someone who is an entrepreneur and has raised money from friends and family, that is a serious burden and serious responsibility. And, you know, those people kind of do what they have to do to try to make something happen. And it doesn't always work out, but, you know, you don't quit easily is kind of one of the most important things. So that's super important to me. I'm looking for people who can build a great culture. You know, it's all about the people that you can bring into your organization. No one can do this themselves. And so you really have to build an extraordinary team. So when I see entrepreneurs who are able to bring in people who are, you know, more experienced, more senior than them, who have, you know, had big wins and yet are coming, choosing to be part of this organization, that to me is super, super exciting. So I love that. And I look for people who are coachable. So who are open, you know, like none of us know everything and we make mistakes and we surround ourselves. I'm sure like, you know, you love talking to, connecting with different people and learning from them. I'm very much the same way. And so surrounding yourself with people who have more experience and then listening and learning from them and evolving based on that is really important. So I want to find folks who are coachable, who that doesn't mean they need to take every idea that I suggest, but, you know, let's have a conversation. Here are things that I've seen work well for other companies, and someone that is open to that. I think really that goes a very long way. Those are a few of the kind of key attributes that I really, really look for. And, you know, no matter what, the minimum threshold is like, I want to find people who are ethical and smart and, you know, are good human beings in their core. Like life is way too short to be working with people who you have any sort of question about those things.
Well said, really well said. And probably one of the key takeaways would be that it goes way beyond the pitch. It goes way beyond the intro and the deck and all the other good stuff that you have. It goes long into dinner or drinks or just that side conversation about something personal or so. That's where the magic happens, because you get the essence of the true human being. And that's what I heard you saying. Is that how it works in your world?
100%. I mean, I love to go on hikes with folks, or at least, you know, pre-COVID or distance hikes now, or walks where you just want to spend time with people. And like, I want to know who those people, like who they are as human beings. That's why I do like, you asked me, you know, before, like, are there a bunch of companies that I'm, you know, initially met and was just blown away by? It's pretty, like, I love connecting with people, but it takes me a while to kind of warm up to an investment opportunity, because I like to get to know the people and get to see how, you know, it's easy to give a great 30-minute or hour-long pitch, although there's not actually that many people who are really, you know, knock those out of the park, but you come across those kind of people. But it's much more important to see how they're actually executing and how they follow up with you and how they interact when you have, you know, hard questions or ask for more data, and to see, you know, okay, they're going to close that big deal supposedly. Did they actually close it? And so it takes a little while to kind of do that. And so I really welcome opportunities where I can get to spend some quality time with entrepreneurs and get to know them as people. And I really believe in kind of having an integrated life where you're kind of the same, you know, professionally and personally. And so I think, you know, I like to be very open with my entrepreneurs about my life and develop friendships with them if I can and feels appropriate, and get to know them as, you know, as people as well.
And a certain amount of vulnerability has to be there. They can't always be selling. Man, does that drive you crazy when somebody's always selling? You're like, enough already.
Yeah, I don't want that at all. I don't want any part of that. Like, if I'm not having real conversations with folks, then that's, you know, that's not a good use of time. Not how, not the people that I want to be working with. And it's not how I can be helpful, right? I mean, companies go through hard times. You have to be transparent and be willing to kind of open up and share your problems. And no one's, you know, it's hard. Like, I know it's hard. I know businesses run into challenges as a board member, as an investor. I don't expect to hear everything's up and to the right all the time. And if I hear that, I know, you know, it's likely that I'm not hearing the whole truth. And then that causes me to have concerns about, okay, what kind of filtering is taking place here? You know, what am I not hearing? And do I have trust issues now as a result of that?
Exactly. So I love the conversation. So here's my challenge. I love that conversation because when you have that conversation, it means we're going to have a real conversation and you're looking for some feedback versus I found out yesterday that I had to pay $500,000 liability or fine or whatever it is. And they're telling you after the fact, that does not build up trust with a relationship, I would imagine. Yeah, it's just that's what, when I'm looking at companies myself, it's that. I don't want to find out after the fact. Oh, I mentioned it. No, you didn't mention it. We didn't know that all this money was going to be going out towards that. We thought it was actually going to be on R&D or so. So interesting stuff. So people looking to be attractive to a venture capital company need to build, let me see if I got it right. They need to be real. They have to be driven. They should have a track record.
I mean, you know, that gives some people more confidence. I don't think not necessarily. But, you know, that helps. The notion of kind of the serial entrepreneur is an attractive one with a lot of kind of sexiness around it. There's not a lot of people who have been successful repeat entrepreneurs. So I think it's more of kind of a myth than reality. But, you know, nice if someone at least has been part of some interesting businesses and built up some good experience, but not a must have.
And you, thank you. And you said family and friends is a key indicator that they're in because they're taking their relationships into this relation, into this business with themselves. But then I think the key element for you is being exponential. They need to be able to be multiplied so much that it makes this unicorn possibility a reality.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we're looking for people who are solving very, very big market problems and with using technology to do that and have a vision for realizing a multi-billion dollar company. So yeah, there's all sorts of different paths. Some people will just really focus on super early stage deals and they'll only buy into a deal if it's, you know, a $4 or $5 million pre-money and they're fine to get out at a $30 or $40 million kind of exit and could have a 10 or 20X there. That's one model. You know, pay attention to our cost to get in. But if it's a really big opportunity, then there can be flexibility there. And sometimes we'll pay up a little bit more to be part of a really big company where we think there's 100X, you know, opportunity still. But we love folks who are, you know, thinking really big. Peter, we talk a lot about moonshots at A360 and this notion of really going for something super, solving a very, very big problem. And that resonates with us and what we like to try to find.
Will Weissman, this has been amazing. Thank you so much for educating me on this whole process behind venture capital and venture capitalists and your fund. Thank you so much. And I'm looking forward to seeing how Kitty Hawk Venture 3, is it? Are they all Kitty Hawk?
Great. Yep. All Kitty Hawk.
Very good. And you're still raising capital for that.
We are. Yeah. Thank you so much, my friend. Really such a pleasure to chat with you and, you know, so many similarities, I think, with how we think about the world and kind of the passion and excitement that we bring to what we're doing. So really such a pleasure to get to chat with you.
My joy. Thank you so much. You've been listening to the Pitchology Podcast. We invite you to check out the Pitchology course and workshop online, along with other helpful content at pitchology.ai. That's .ai, not .com. Thank you for joining us today.